The neighborhood kids would come over, and we'd take 2x4s and bat rocks across the dirt lot that made up most of my grandparents' backyard. My mom and I were living with my grandparents at the time in this small town in southeast New Mexico, on West Texas Street. There is no East Texas Street, oddly enough. It just starts west. Piles of rusted car fenders, old railway ties, a concrete slab of something sat out behind two sheds my grandfather had built himself many years before, providing enough platforms and roofs to climb on and loose materials to balance and jump from. You weren't supposed to go into the sheds, one full of old tools that my grandfather used when he was a young farmer, when they called him Bean Picker, and another shed for stuff Bean Picker didn't want in the house anymore. He'd keep the keys to the sheds on top of the fridge so little ones like me couldn't reach them. The house is now abandoned. No trespassing signs attached to a number of its exterior walls. At least that's what Google Earth shows. I zoom in and trace the path I used to walk to school, going across 9th Street to stop by my friend Raulito's house and pick him up. We'd cut through his backyard and into the alley, across a dusty vacant lot that parked tractor trailers full of hay bales, and stop long enough to throw rocks into the bales to see if they'd stick. And the owner's wife would come out in her house coat and yell at us, threatening to call our moms. So we'd run down the street to school, Hillcrest Elementary, which is now also empty. Along with three other schools in town, Hillcrest closed in 2017 because of poor performance. All of the students were consolidated into two brand new, better performing schools. My name is Scott Lunsford. I'm an associate professor of writing, rhetoric, and technical communication at James Madison University. I teach courses in genre theory, editing, contemporary rhetorical theory, and first-year writing. I also produce multimodal forms of scholarship, particularly videos, and much of my current research explores graffiti and other types of counter-rhetorics in unsanctioned spaces. I am particularly drawn to the backs of buildings and alleyways and underpasses and train yards, to be in the places where graffiti writers find their own solace. It's a profession that I have only recently realized extends from West Texas Street decades ago. My teaching over the past couple of years has reached back to that house, to that street, and the desert tan neighborhood. And I bring my own experiences from them into the classroom where I encourage students to write through their own childhood experiences in a variety of modes, including video and audio. One assignment in a first-year writing class asked students to write a play narrative. They were simply to write about a play event that they could deeply describe, perhaps even reenact through dialogue they may have had with other kids they were playing with. Just tell the story. Now, many students find it challenging to write about themselves, as many of them in previous years of education haven't had the opportunity to reflect much and articulate their own experiences as part of primary research. Depending upon the genre, I advocate researchers inserting their own experiences into their work. Doing so further makes us and our readers aware that research and writing are not disembodied, that it isn't magic and immaterial. Writing and rhetoric are, of course, always material. And that's what I hope to bring to students' attention, which can be rather frustrating for them because they're not used to it, but eventually liberating for some because it gives them permission to play.
You have to hold on.
Hold on real tight. Ready?
This is not even bad.
I'm at a playground with my own kids. It's a universal design playground with accessible equipment, stationary but fun nonetheless. There are swings and slides and a synthetic rock wall, and musical instruments, a chalkboard built into a concrete sculpture of a horse. Everything has its definition. Everything is used based on its purpose. But every now and then, children will climb on top of the chalkboard wall and walk rope across. And of course, the favorite thing to do, walking up the slide to slide back down. With this, kids are attempting to loosen the space in order to appropriate it for themselves. And I think this is what I'm asking my own students to do with their writing, as they come in from years of using other models that have worked for them in their situations, and then venture into a classroom where I encourage them to reflect on their lives as writers. That means tearing apart their assumptions about what it means to be a writer, what writing means. They find that they must loosen those tight spaces, those tight approaches, those tight assumptions to writing, in order to find room for playing with writing, which of course means writing through modes other than the traditional alphabetic text. This is particularly important for a second assignment that I have this same class of students perform. I group them into teams of three and ask them to share their original play narratives with each other and begin to find aspects of each of them that have some connections among them. They are then to conduct research into the connections they discover and produce a 4-minute audio project, something I call a digital loose parts soundscape. The idea behind loose parts comes from a play theorist named Simon Nicholson, who back in the early 70s defined loose parts theory, which essentially says that the less defined or structured an object may be within a certain context, the more opportunity it has to take on other purposes. So, a 2x4, outside the context of carpentry, for example, can become a bat that you hit rocks with. And so some play theorists have taken issue with the design of playgrounds, with equipment that have purposefully limited use. For example, a swing is a swing, and you can swing on it. You can't take it apart and create something new from it. This is what I'm asking students to do with each other's narratives. Rip them apart. Find something new about them, pull in other parts, such as research and sound effects and music, and create something new. Now, there are challenges to this. One is if I'm expecting my students to take as much agency as possible to find connections on their own, essentially giving them permission to play without supervision, where do I come in as a teacher? How do I teach someone to find connections among disparate things, connections that sometimes simply aren't there? Do I let students play and whatever comes out is what comes out? And do I let them be okay with that? Because they might not be okay with it. Sometimes the connections among narratives were contrived and stretched and made no sense. Others had to revise extensively their original narratives in order to create connections. One of the other challenges stems from my requiring audio research or audio recorded research in the soundscape. It's easy to search library databases and Google Scholar for the research you need. You can, of course, skim parts of alphabetic text to find what you might be looking for, but it's much harder to search for research that comes in audio form, such as NPR articles, and then to skim through such audio pieces in order to see if that particular research might be appropriate. You sometimes have to listen to the whole thing in order to see if it works. NPR's website, thankfully, has a search function, so you can search for various stories on, say, free-range parenting or how play has an effect on the brain. There are also transcripts for many of the audio articles, so anyone can scan the text before actually having to listen to the whole audio piece just to see if it's appropriate. NPR also allows you to download audio articles, which you can bring into audio editing software. All in all, though, I've let it be okay that these projects are seemingly messy at the end, because if I'm to advocate a notion of play throughout the course, where I must allow for as much agency as I can, that is, after all, a necessity for playing, the objects of that play become in themselves loose parts. Not tightly packaged, tightly controlled, tightly produced artifacts, but manifestations of play themselves, of voices who are retaking ownership of play that they had left in their childhood.